MechCast, Sunday, August 30th, 2020. Hey, Mech Geeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for Mech Geeks by Mech Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MechCast. Glad to be back here with you. It's another week of Apple, Mac, and iOS thing news. I guess all the Apple things, news and reviews and information and questions and all that fun stuff that we do every week here on the MechCast. So glad to be back here with you. Yeah, hopefully you're having a great week, weekend, whatever it might be. Things are going pretty well here in MechCast HQ, I guess, as it were. The studio is cooling down. We're getting away from that heat wave I was experiencing, I think, last time we spoke. So not quite as sweaty here in the studio, not to gross you out or anything, but I'm having a good time, as you can tell. I hope you are having a good time too. We do have some great things to get into in this episode, including the latest on iPhone 12 rumors, some information, new information about Apple TV, not just and Apple TV Plus service, I guess I should say. Not just new shows, but also just some new information about possible new future features. Apple making some acquisitions. We have some updates to the whole Apple Epic Games story, and some stuff happening with Apple Maps and data that's kind of exciting. So we'll get into that in the news, and then we're going to get to some of your questions and feedback. Actually, I have a follow-up on the reminders bug that we were talking about in the last episode of the MechCast, and it's actually some good information. We figured some stuff out with the help of a listener, so that's always great, community chiming in. We have questions about Apple Watch and playlists. We're going to talk about some of the cool new upcoming iOS 14 features that you may or may not know about. Not the stuff that Apple's already talked about, but some cool stuff that I've discovered along the way. And then we'll get into a discussion about malware and what's happening with that in our community, because I'm getting a lot of questions about it recently for some reason. And then we're going to wrap things up with a thing of the moment, something we haven't done in a while. I actually discovered a new game that I really enjoyed this past week that I want to share with you. So that should round out the episode. Should be a great one, but I say we just jump right in and get to some of the Apple news, starting with iPhone and the 120 hertz ProMotion display. Yeah, that's something that a lot of people are hoping to see in this year's iPhone 12. Rumors have been that we might see it in the Pro models. I don't think it's going to make it all the way down to the iPhone 12, and we may or may not see it at all, because it's hard to believe, even at this late stage, that we're hearing from at least two leakers in the Apple community that Apple is having some problems getting the 120 hertz driver ICs from their suppliers. Yeah, Apple should be already moving into production, but a lot of times they hold features right up until the last minute. Sounds like they might be doing that in this case. Display analyst Ross Young and tech YouTuber and Apple leaker John Prosser are both reporting on Apple's troubles with the 120 hertz ICs. This is a feature that's been debated in the community, of course, as it would potentially be a significant drain on battery life, also probably driving up some of the costs for Apple. And some are saying, though, that they're willing to give up a little bit of battery life for that buttery smooth scrolling that you get with the ProMotion display. You know, if you have it on your iPad, it's hard to go back from it. You pick up your iPhone and it's just not quite as smooth. So a lot of people really hoping that this is a feature that Apple announces this year. Prosser noted that there was a toggle in settings for the iPhone 12 Pro Max models, even showing some screenshots of an upcoming beta of iOS. And he says that in addition to a potential 120 hertz display, Apple is also going to be, of course, adding in that new LiDAR sensor to the camera on the iPhone, the same one that's in the current generation of iPad Pros. And where Apple is going to be leveraging that, apparently, is with assisting with a lot of camera features, including autofocus and object detection while taking videos and photos, and also some low-light enhancements, including a new enhanced light mode. So What do you think about these features? Are you looking forward to LiDAR? Is a 120 hertz display a big thing for you? And if Apple had to pull that out at the last minute, and it sounds like they could, would that be a disappointment for you for this year's iPhones? I'm kind of mixed about it. The display, I'm not so concerned with. I am happy with the display that's on my current iPhone with the 60 hertz refresh rate, and as nice as it would be to have 120 hertz, if it's not working perfectly or if it's having issues or if Apple just can't get that component, the components they need in there to support it, I don't think it would be a bitter disappointment for me. The LiDAR stuff, though, I'm really looking forward to. Anything that Apple can do, I think, to increase or improve camera features in each iteration of the iPhone is good, not only for consumers, but also, I think, generally good for iPhone sales. A lot of people, you know, the camera that is in their phone is the camera that they use, and they always want to have better and better quality photos. And I think that's true across the board. So hopefully Apple gets that in there. Because of new technologies like 5G and higher refresh rate displays, though, all of those things are going to have an impact on battery life. We're also hearing that Apple is exploring some new battery technology. This is coming out of DigiTimes. They're reporting that some of the tech from our AirPods and AirPod Pros might make it into future versions of the iPhone, specifically hybrid flexible printed circuit boards and system in a package, or SIP chips, finding their way into the iPhone 12. Apple is looking at reportedly hybrid boards, and this would be a solution that would allow for more space savings in the iPhone, which often can lead to larger batteries or room for other components. So Apple can kind of cram some more things in there. And if they can add more battery, that helps offset some of the battery drain for a lot of these new features. So that may be another thing that we see in this year's iPhone, is this switch to hybrid battery boards that are kind of taking cues and notes from the AirPods. TSMC is also chiming in about the performance of the new processors that are coming off their line with their new 5-nanometer technology. This is the same process they're going to use for A14 chips, so we could expect to see in the iPhone 12 lineup similar increases to performance or reduced power consumption. Apple tends to err on the increased performance side, but the new chips, in looking at some of the TSMC specs, could offer up to 15% better battery performance, or reduced battery consumption of about 30%. And that would be depending upon how Apple chooses to set them up. I would imagine they do some sort of balance, but probably pushing more toward the performance side. That is, unless those components, you know, some of those new features in the iPhone are really sucking up the battery and they're not able to add more battery capacity, in which case they may want to go for more of the reduced battery consumption. So we'll have to see what Apple ultimately ends up doing. Also in the same piece, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Corporation also noted that they are already looking to move to a new 3-nanometer process sometime in 2022. So I think we're going to be on the 5-nanometer process for the A14 and probably the A15, but after that, moving to a new 3-nanometer process. And it's amazing how they keep pushing this technology smaller and smaller. And we just reap the benefits in terms of better processors, better performance, better battery life. So all good things. Last thing we're hearing in the news kind of related to Apple hardware this week is, we did talk a little bit last week that we're still expecting an Apple Watch update and an iPad update to happen sometime soon. Could happen in the fall, like next month, as soon as next month. And a big indication that that is on the horizon is a couple of Eurasian Economic Commission filings showed up for new Apple products this past week. We believe Apple is readying the Apple Watch Series 6 and the iPad for an update, and that is what was filed. There are also leaked images surfacing of what supposedly is an iPad Air manual, possibly confirming Ming-Chi Kuo's rumors of a 10.8-inch iPad update that we'd been talking about on previous episodes of the MacCast. The manual did show a device with reduced bezels and no home button, although it doesn't look like it has Face ID technology on it in it because the manual mentions Touch ID technology. And you might be asking, well, how do we get Touch ID with no home button? If you remember previous rumors that we had heard from Ming-Chi Kuo and other sources, we had been hearing that Apple had been looking to build Touch ID into the power button on their devices. So that might be what they did in this case. Also, there was another report, though, that was supposedly of some leaked schematics for the new iPad Air, and that did mention Face ID. So the rumor seems to be a little bit in flux. Will it have Face ID? Will it have Touch ID? Definitely, it's looking like if it does have Touch ID, it's going to be a new form of that, which is pretty exciting. We haven't seen an update to kind of Touch ID in, you know, I think since it came out, really. It's always been based on the little ring around the home button. So it'd be nice to see Apple driving that technology forward. And I would imagine that keeps costs down on, a device like the iPad Air versus moving to Face ID. The other thing we're seeing and hearing in these rumors is the move to a USB-C connector from Lightning. I don't find that too surprising. It's seeming like that's the direction Apple has been moving in across the board with iPads, and so it makes sense that that would happen with this year's update. And we're also seeing a smart connector on the back of the device, possibly there to support Apple's Magic Keyboard. So you're going to have an iPad Air update that looks a lot like and has a lot of the features of the new iPad Pros, probably at a much more affordable price point. And so that's pretty exciting. As far as when we're going to hear about these things, like I said, we are expecting that Apple might announce these pre their iPhone announcement, which we already know is being delayed until probably October. So could be coming right up. We'll have to just wait and see. And we could have some exciting things to talk about here on future episodes of the MacCast. But that's kind of what's been happening this week with iPhone 12 rumors and some of Apple's latest hardware rumors. Moving on to Apple TV Plus news, we're hearing about a couple new shows, a new series, and that's based on a period novel, and also some documentaries coming up. According to Deadline, Apple has ordered a new series based on the period novel The Essex Serpent by Sarah Perry. It's the story of a recently widowed woman who escapes from an abusive marriage, moving to the village of Aldwinter in Essex. While there, she hears about the local legend of a creature called the Essex Serpent, and being an amateur naturalist, decides to investigate. The series will be executive produced by and star Keira Knightley, who you might know from her role in the Pirates of the Caribbean films. No word on when the series will be coming to Apple TV+. Variety also notes that Apple is getting set to release three new documentary series on Apple TV Plus soon. A show called Tiny World, which is a 6-episode series narrated by Paul Rudd, is set to be released on October 2nd. Becoming You, which is also a 6-episode series, which will cover and take a look at over 100 children throughout the world and how they learn to think, speak, and move from birth to 5 years old, is set to release on November 3rd. And then finally, Earth at Night in Color, a 6-episode series filmed across 6 continents from the Arctic Circle to the African grasslands that will, quote, follow the moonlit dramas of animals at night, revealing new insights and never-before-seen behaviors. And that is coming to Apple TV Plus on December 4th. I don't know if you've had a chance to see any of Apple's documentary series, but I've enjoyed a couple of them. The Beastie Boys series I thought was amazing, and I think it's up for like 6 Emmy Awards, so very worth checking out, especially if you're like me, a child of the 80s and grew up with the Beastie Boys and listening to their music, or if you're a fan in any way, it's well worth watching. I also really enjoyed the series Home, which takes a look at architecture all over the world and just has beautiful visuals to it and beautiful storytelling. I really did enjoy that series. So Apple's making some amazing documentary series, and it's good to see 3 new ones coming in here before the end of the year. As far as advances in Apple TV Plus technology, We're getting a report from Bloomberg that says that Apple is looking to possibly incorporate some augmented reality bonus content into their Apple TV shows starting sometime next year. What it would do is use your iPhone or iPad to sync with the TV show while you're watching it and then present augmented reality content on the screen. So it would basically pop up relevant content right there in your living room. You could have right there sitting on your coffee table a lunar rover possibly being displayed while you're watching an episode of For All Mankind. And the reports didn't go into this, but I would assume then you'd be able to interact with that, maybe move the model around, get closer look at it, maybe get more facts and information, that sort of thing. They also mentioned kind of director commentary type stuff. So you might have maybe actors or directors popping up in your living room to talk to you about things that are going on in the film. It seems like an interesting application of the technology. I'd be curious to see how it works. You know, generally when I'm watching stuff, I don't want to be interrupted, but maybe through a second viewing, like you would again with director's commentary, it might be a fun kind of new way to enjoy the content. So I don't know. What do you think about this? Is this something that would interest you? I think it would get even cooler if Apple does eventually release some AR glasses, and then you don't have to have your iPad screen or your iPhone screen up there in front of you. You just have it sort of in your viewing window as you're watching the show. I think that's probably the ultimate goal of this stuff, but maybe the first iteration is kind of looking through, I always call it like looking through a window, right? When you're doing augmented reality through a screen that you're holding up, it's kind of just like putting something in your face. And the ultimate experience would just be it's there in your field of vision. So, you know, I'm curious to see how this technology might work, but I'm also curious to hear your opinions about it. Another thing we're hearing now that Apple TV Plus subscriptions are getting ready to renew is that Apple might be looking to extend that a little bit. Again, this information comes from Bloomberg. They say with the first batch of year-long Apple TV Plus trial subscriptions nearing a close, Apple is considering an extension. The extension would still require that you buy a new qualifying Apple product, and they're saying that the free period would not quite be for another full year, although they don't specifically say for how long, but maybe Apple will tack on 3 months or 6 months. I have to imagine part of the reason that they're considering this is the current pandemic situation with a lot of the second series or second seasons of their shows being put on hold. They're probably going to be delayed releases, and I'm sure Apple was trying to time and use those as drivers to get people to renew their subscriptions. So by keeping them on the service a little while longer till those new series start to come out, I think they're banking and hoping that they're going to have some better renewal rates when the subscriptions actually do expire. So regardless, that's really great news. I'd love to get an extension of my free Apple TV Plus service because, as you know, I've been enjoying that immensely. Moving from the world of augmented reality to virtual reality, it looks like Apple maybe this week possibly acquired a new VR startup. A VR company called Spaces may have recently been acquired by Apple. The company started as part of DreamWorks Animation and then was spun off to create VR experiences like Terminator Salvation, Fight for the Future. This was an in-person experience that you would have in malls and other locations. The company, of course, had been struggling in the current environment with the pandemic. They were forced to shut down their physical locations, and it looks like they decided to pivot into creating a virtual reality conference room and whiteboard experience for online video conferencing systems like Zoom and Microsoft Teams. What was interesting and what got noticed by the press was about a week ago, they announced that they were shutting down the service completely to head in, quote, a new direction. It was then that sources started telling the media that that direction was basically Cupertino and that Apple had acquired the company. At this point, it's not really clear what Apple's plans for the company or the technology are. Apple does not comment on any of that stuff beyond giving a canned response that they acquire smaller companies from time to time, and they don't really comment on it. I would imagine a lot of it is to pick up engineering talent and developer talent, also just to secure maybe some of the licensing and patents that the company has. I could see something like this making its way into maybe FaceTime, virtual reality, you know, meetings and stuff like that. We do know that Apple supposedly has a team working on VR technologies for Apple, so it could make it make its way into many products, I would imagine, across the product line. There are some videos of this technology, YouTube videos of the company showing off the technology. You kind of have little avatars in the environment. I think they were using an Oculus system to kind of demo it. And while it seemed interesting to me, I don't know if it's the kind of office experience that I would want to have doing office, you know, meetups in VR. But I guess if our, you know, current world keeps going the way it's going, this may become a reality that we need to sort of slide into. I hope that's not the case, but, you know, it's interesting nonetheless. And, you know, Apple buying another VR company just sort of shows where their headspace is in terms of thinking about technologies in the future. So is Apple going to put out a VR headset anytime soon? I doubt it, but I'm sure they have plans for this technology, and it'll be interesting to see whatever they come up with. This week, we saw Apple and Epic Games go into their first round in court, what is likely to be many, many rounds of legal battles over their fight on Epic challenging Apple's in-app purchase requirement for their App Store and developer program. In case you missed it or haven't been paying attention, this is probably the biggest story going on in the Apple community right now. Epic Games, the makers of Fortnite, decided that they did not like having to pay Apple's 30% cut of in-app purchases and snuck into their app a alternative payment platform. Of course, Apple then immediately said that they, if they didn't remove it, they were going to take the game offline and not allow it for sale on the App Store, which they did. Epic had filed a restraining order request with a judge, and they went to court this week to stop that. And they went to court this week to see what was going on. And it came out 50-50, a judgment for Epic and a judgment for Apple, because another thing that Apple did was say that they were also going to shut down Epic's developer account for their Unreal game engine. So I guess they have one developer account for the games that they publish, and then they also have a second developer account for the Unreal game engine, which is a game engine that's used by a number of iOS apps and other developers. So it's more of an engine piece, and many, many games rely on that. So Epic was trying to keep Apple from revoking their developer license across the board. The judge in this case saw through Epic's attempt to blame Apple for their situation regarding Fortnite. She allowed Apple to move forward with removing the app from the App Store and revoking the developer license for their apps and games, all of which have been now removed from the App Store. If you are an existing owner of one of the apps and you've already downloaded it, you can continue to use it, but what you're not going to get is any updates. And that includes the latest new season of Fortnite, which is the big thing that Epic was hoping would sort of push Apple or pressure Apple into them caving in on the in-app purchase requirement. They did not do that. The judge also did side, though, with Epic on the Unreal game engine piece. That developer account was allowed to be restrained, basically saying that Apple could not block that or suspend that account. She did note in her ruling that Apple seemed to be doing in that regard was a bit more retaliatory, and that it would have a direct impact not just on Epic Games, but a lot of those third-party developers who rely on that technology in their apps. And I'm fully on board with that. I was not too happy about Apple potentially harming other developers and them ending up being collateral damage in this battle between Epic and Apple. For their part, Apple says they're ready to welcome Epic back into the App Store as soon as they comply with Apple's guidelines and remove the alternative payment system. Epic is showing no signs of being interested in doing that anytime soon. As a matter of fact, this week they sent out an email to all of their Apple customers blaming Apple for the entire situation and saying that you're not going to get access to the new season or new sort of gear upgrades on iOS until the lawsuit is resolved. So I think they're in for the long haul, both companies kind of entrenching, and it's going to be an interesting battle to see play out. It's also going to have some very significant market ramifications for Apple, depending upon which side ends up victorious. So I'm not a fan of lawsuits, as you know. I'm not happy to see this one going down. It's going to be interesting to see how Apple adapts some of their policies throughout this situation, and more importantly, after the rulings come down. It really is going to come down to what a judge decides in terms of, I think, how Apple ultimately reacts. But I don't know, what do you think about this stuff? You know, is it time for Apple to once again sort of reevaluate these policies, or are you more on Apple's side and think, you know, they haven't really done anything wrong here? Their rules have been pretty clear for a long time. They've also recently changed some policies, made it easier for developers to appeal decisions and also to request changes to existing rules. So this is something that Fortnite could have taken advantage of. They could have put in a case and a request to Apple prior to just enabling a feature on the server side without Apple's consent to ask them to adapt or change this rule. Now, I highly doubt, and maybe Epic already knew this, that Apple would change that rule, but they did not kind of go through proper channels. So I think if they were playing by the rules, they wouldn't be in this situation. Again, we talked about this last week. It's obvious to me too. They wanted to create this situation so they could create a lot of press and buzz and get a lot of people paying attention to the message that they're trying to throw out there. And give them the ability to really try to make Apple look like a tyrant and a bad guy here. And I think, you know, their Media Blitz campaign is being probably pretty effective in areas outside of the Apple community. You know, here in the Apple community, we kind of know what's what and what's going on. But I think at large, you know, you're looking at what is considered to be the largest company in the world. And, you know, Fortnite is trying to portray themselves as a small, you know, game developer. Obviously, they're smaller than Apple, but they're small by no means. They are a pretty big juggernaut in the gaming industry. So it's really not a battle of David versus Goliath like they're maybe trying to play out, but it is like Goliath versus Goliath. And it is going to be ultimately interesting to see what happens. So I'd love to hear your opinions on this. Of course, send me feedback, mattcast@gmail.com. But we're going to have to just sit back and watch this. But for now, it's Apple 1, Epic 1. In this battle. Remember the Apple Air Power Mat? It was going to revolutionize and change how we are able to wirelessly power our Apple devices. Apple was going to develop this great pad that allowed you to basically throw your devices anywhere on the pad. Up to three devices. It could be an iPhone, an Apple Watch, didn't matter, and it would charge all of them seamlessly and easily. It was going to be an amazing product. Apple even previewed it, pre-announced it, and then ultimately regretted it because, as you know, they weren't able to deliver on the promise, and the product ultimately got canceled, or shelved at least. Well, Bloomberg this week says that Apple might be looking to do a slightly, quote, less ambitious version of the AirPower wireless charging mat. This is something that Ming-Chi Kuo also mentioned in the past, saying that Apple planned to release a smaller charging mat for the iPhone. They don't give a lot of details on what less ambitious means, so the whole story is a little bit murky. We don't know if it's going to be a single charging puck with an Apple logo on it, or be able to charge multiple devices. Is it going to have multiple charging areas like some of the multi-charger stands we've seen out there, with a separate space for the Apple Watch versus your iPhone? No one really knows. But, you know, it does make me question, is this something that we really want? It kind of ends up feeling like Apple's just doing a Me Too multi-device wireless charging mat, because there's other products out there from companies like Nomad that are doing this already, and it feels like Apple would just kind of have to have the same design and the same technology. The big thing about the AirPower mat was that it was really going to be different, right? It was going to give you a lot of flexibility. It was going to be very easy to use. It was going to be all those things that we come to expect in an Apple product. So I'm really curious who would buy this, because chances are it's going to be much higher priced because it has the Apple logo on it, and it's probably not going to do anything that's too much different than some of the other products that are already out on the market. So is this something that we're vying for? Is this something that we really want? I'm kind of, you know, putting not a lot of stock into this rumor, because I don't think that's the kind of thing that Apple would do, right? So maybe it is actually a thing, and maybe Apple is going to give us some sort of revolutionary new way to do wireless charging with multiple devices, and that would still be cool, even if it isn't the full promise of an AirPower mat. But Yeah, I'm. It was just an interesting story this week to hear, and I just kind of was left feeling like, yeah, do we really need this? And then finally in the news for this week, we all know that Apple really likes to be in control of their own destiny. And we also know that Apple has been rapidly working to improve maps and bring in a bunch of new features, launching their own ground truth initiatives last year and previous years, also ground mapping efforts that brought in new features like updated mapping data and the Apple version of Street View called Look Around, which in my opinion, they can't roll out fast enough. I wish that was available in more regions because it's amazing in the places that they've already rolled it out in. I'm just blown away by that technology and I can't wait for it to get to my city or every city around the world. It should be everywhere, just like Google, but obviously that takes a lot of time. But one area that Apple has not been controlling their own destiny with respect to maps is for point of interest data. They rely a lot on outside data for that, as well as outside data for local photos of restaurants and those sorts of things. They have partnerships with outside services like Yelp, TripAdvisor, and Foursquare. Well, it's now looking like that they might be looking to make some changes with that starting in iOS 14. Developers have discovered a new user interface for suggesting recommendations for places and points of interest, and that information is being sent directly to Apple. The new feature is also allowing you to directly share and upload photos that will go into Maps from Apple. So far, only a small subset of places seem to be actually displaying or using the new data in iOS 14 in the Maps app, so the feature likely is very much a work in progress. I would imagine that Apple is still going to rely heavily on third-party data and information well into the future, and they may even just combine that information and aggregate it all together. They basically license that information to roll it in to the Maps app, so more data, in my opinion, is always better, and if you can aggregate it, I think that's ultimately a good thing. No indication if that's what they really want to do. Ultimately, I would imagine they want it to just be all their own information and on their service. I think a big part of the driving force for that probably too is the security and privacy that Apple is very much into now. So not having to get that data or having customers share data with third parties, I think, is big on Apple's mind. So that's kind of a cool thing. There's also a recent report, speaking of Apple kind of moving away from third-party data, that Apple might be looking to dump Google and Google Search in favor of their own in-house search engine. This would be a huge deal. And again, the information was noticed in changes to iOS 14. It was reported by CryoWolf and highlighted in an iMore piece. They are basically reporting that Apple is hiring search engineers with experience and focuses on artificial intelligence and machine learning. It also appears that Spotlight Search in iOS 14 is no longer returning web search data from Google, but instead coming directly from the websites that they link to. And then finally, the piece notes that Apple's AppleBot web crawler is getting updates that make it behave a lot more like Google's bot. And so Apple could be secretly building an in-house search engine to help drive searches in future Apple products. Again, this is another, I think, long-term thing. I don't see this happening anytime soon, but there are hints, I guess, apparently, of Apple playing around with it in iOS 14, which is interesting. But I would still expect iOS 14 to rely heavily on third-party search. You do have your options, right? You can use DuckDuckGo, you can use Google Search, which I think is still the default, and I can't remember if Yahoo's still in there or not, but I think they might be. So very interesting. What do you think about Apple being a search engine, at least for their own products? That's a lot of heavy work, but again, Apple, very large company, they have a lot of money and resources they can buy, as we've seen a lot of other smaller companies, and integrate a lot of technologies very quickly. You know, as rough as Apple Maps was, it has gotten so much better in recent years. It has taken several years, so I would imagine we'd see similar growing pains with a search engine. And I don't know if many of us at this point want to go through growing pains with a search engine. So maybe they've learned their lessons from Apple Maps and they'll wait until this is fully baked before they try and roll it into their products. But at the very least, it looks like they're experimenting with it a little bit in iOS 14. Very, very interesting stuff this week in our Apple news. If you have any feedback or comments on any of it, of course, as always, send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, and that is Raycon. Hey, chances are in these times you have a lot of people in your family, in your dorm, in your apartment, maybe sharing space and all working at home, living in the same space, maybe schooling in the same space, and chances are you also don't want to be hearing all of each other's conference calls or music. That's why everyone needs a great set of wireless earbuds. But before you drop hundreds of dollars on a pair, check out wireless earbuds from Raycon. They start at about half the price of other premium earbuds on the market, and they sound amazing. I've been using a set of the Everyday E25 earbuds, and they sound great. And I have to say, they are super comfortable. I can wear them all day while working at home, and I barely notice them in my ears at all. And they sound great, too, whether I'm on a Zoom call, at the office, or listening to my Apple Music. They are just incredible. Their newest model, the Everyday E25 earbuds, are the best ones yet, with 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and a more compact design that gives you a nice noise isolating fit. I think a set of these would also make a great gift for kids heading back to school or even schooling from home. I also like that they come in different colors and they have a great style, so you can really match your own personal taste and your own personal style. The company was co-founded by Ray J, and celebrities like Snoop Dogg, Melissa Etheridge, and Brandy are obsessed with Raycons. And now for the really good part. Because you're a MacCast listener, of course, you're going to get a deal. Now's the time to get the latest and greatest from Raycon. Get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/MacCast. That's buyraycon.com/MacCast for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. Buyraycon.com/MacCast. Be sure to use that link and enter the code on that page at checkout to get your 15% off. And a huge thank you to Raycon for their support of the MacCast. So remember last time on the MacCast, we had a question about how to set hourly reminders manually in the Reminders app. I had a listener who had written in to say they were able to figure out how to do it through Siri, so you could ask Siri to set a reminder and then remind me every 2 hours to, say, do something like wash your hands. And tried to do the same thing manually within the Reminders app and didn't see the hourly option. And I even went in and tried this myself before doing the last episode of the MacCast. I could not figure out how to do it. So I had a very similar experience. Well, it turns out, I'm not as smart as I think I am, because listener Howard wrote in to let me know I missed a critical step, and that one step that I was missing was the reason why I was not seeing that option. So I really appreciate, this is why we have the MacCast and why we have the community, right? You guys are amazing, and you can help point out where I've gone wrong or where I've gone off the rails. And that's why it's not just a one-person podcast. As much as it is a one-person podcast, me just talking to you each and every week, it is really the community, and you guys drive the content. You help keep me in check, and I so appreciate it. But listener Howard wrote in, and he said, hey, Adam, here's the steps you need to do. So if you're manually creating a reminder in the Reminders app, and you want to set it up to remind you on an hourly recurring basis, what you need to do is add the new reminder, tap on that little information icon to go into its settings, and then you want to tap the option for remind me on a day. And that was the part I did, okay? And then I went to tap on the repeat options, and that was when I did not see anything that was hourly. Well, The other thing you need to do before doing that, and this is step two, is you need to tap on the option that says, remind me at a time. That is the critical step, and it obviously makes sense. If you're going to have a timed reminder and you're going to have a timed reminder repeat, that option would need to be on. So you tap that, then you tap the repeat options. Then at the bottom, you can tap on custom, tap on frequency, and then in the list, you will now see hourly as an option. You can select hourly, and at the bottom, you can tap on every and set that between every 1 to, interestingly, 999 hours. So you can go into days and months and probably even longer, even with the hourly, quote unquote, hourly reminders. But that is how you set that. It does work. It is in the current version of iOS, and it works just fine. I am able to confirm that thanks to the sleuthing efforts, or just the information from listener Howard. So Howard, thank you so much for sending in that feedback. I really appreciate it. And to the listener last week who was looking for some help, that's how you do it. Thank you, Howard. So I don't have a current edition of an Apple Watch. I'm still back on a Series 2, but I know with more recent editions of Apple Watch, one of the big new features is a lot more autonomy, right? You can go a lot more places and do a lot more things with your Apple Watch without having your iPhone nearby. At least it seems to be that way. I think it is that way, but Gary, frequent contributor here on the MacCast, emailed me this week with an audio comment, and he made an observation about that autonomy with respect to playing music on the Apple Watch. So here's what Gary had to say.
Hey, Adam, it's Gary. I wanted to mention an issue that I've had with my Apple Watch, which I don't think anyone's really talked about. And I do a lot of running outside lately, and it's nice to have playlists that are synced up and ready to go on my Apple Watch. I do have a cellular version, however, I have turned it off since trying to conserve dollars, resources right now. And what I've noticed is, or I assumed, that the Apple Watch music lists would update on their own as music gets changed or so on. But what I'm finding out is that the Apple Music only updates your playlists when it's on the charger and near your iPhone. Because when you open up the Apple Watch app on your iPhone, it shows you your playlist syncing and says the playlists only sync up when your Apple Watch is near your phone and charging. Which, I wear mine to sleep, and so it only really gets an opportunity to be on the charger for maybe half hour a day, something like that. And I thought, well, this might be something that needs to get addressed. I'm wondering if it's been addressed in the next version of watchOS, but I thought it was worth mentioning. I don't know if anybody else is affected by it. It's nice to have updated playlists.
I would absolutely agree. Nothing could be worse than going out for a run. You're getting out there to exercise. You don't have your iPhone with you, and you find out you have old or outdated playlists, and you don't have the ones you were expecting to work out to. I would imagine that would be very frustrating. And I think this has come up in the past, and it is an oddity, right, Gary? Like the fact that this does not happen automatically, the fact that it doesn't happen or seem to happen over Wi-Fi, that your Apple Watch has to be on the charger. I guess maybe, you know, to prevent issues with the battery dying mid-sync or something like that, it makes sense to that in that regard. But yeah, you'd think it takes away a level of that autonomy that you would be expecting to not so much depend on the iPhone. Again, especially if you can do things over Wi-Fi. Apple's official instructions for how to sync music with your Apple Watch, just to let people know, are to put the Apple Watch on its charger. You need to make sure that it's charging, as Gary noted, and you also do need to make sure that your iPhone is within range of the Apple Watch. You know, you have the little indicator on there, so if you see the little crossed out iPhone icon in red at the top, you know your iPhone's not in close enough range. They also note that you need to go into settings Bluetooth and make sure that the Bluetooth Bluetooth is turned on. So that makes me think that are they actually just using Bluetooth technology to sync music? That seems like a very slow way to do it. I don't know why that would be the option. And then if you do, as Gary noted, want to see what's going on, you can open the Apple Watch app on your iPhone, and you can tap on the My Watch tab. You can scroll down to music, and then you can tap and add the various music or albums or playlists that you want to sync over. And you can tap on the button to add that and then see and make sure that it is syncing over to your Apple Watch. So that is how you have to do it. I don't know if Apple has any plans to change that. One thing that I am wondering about, and I'm going to throw this out to the community, because I did some searching and I didn't really find anything, is are there third-party or alternative apps that you can use that will sync music to your Apple Watch in a different way? Maybe do it when it's not on the charger, when it's just around and available to your phone. I don't know if we even have that kind of background capability to do stuff with our Apple Watch. I think apps can do background transfers and that sort of thing. So is there something out there? Is there an alternative way to get around this limitation? Something we can give to Gary and make a suggestion to him? Like I said, I did some searching and I was not successful, but I think there's some podcast apps that offer up or allow direct syncing. And I'm wondering if they have the same requirement, if that you do need to be on the Apple charger and that the syncing does happen maybe only over Bluetooth. That would be interesting to know as well. So if anybody has insight into this, shoot us some feedback. Send me an email, maccast@gmail.com. Another thing I wanted to talk to you about today is some of the upcoming features in iOS 14 that I think are worth noting that I've discovered through my reading and my research and great sites like MacRumors.com, and I think 9to5Mac and a bunch of places are doing stories, obviously, reports now on some of the more obscure features or lesser known features in iOS 14. Some of that stuff that Apple did not show off at Worldwide Developer Conference, and things that I think are still cool. So I wanted to talk about a couple of those this week. I know some of you are probably running the iOS 14 betas. I also would like to know if you've discovered really cool new features that you're excited about. If you could share those with us, that would be awesome. But one of the features that I think is pretty amazing, and it ties right into Apple's commitment to security and privacy, is some of the new anti-tracking features. Apple is continuing what I call its full court press on protecting our privacy and online data. Now they're adding in iOS 14 that apps need to basically ask your permission to collect data based on your device identifier. And why this is important is that third-party ad companies and companies like Facebook and Google have been using our on-device identifiers to help track us across devices and across different platforms and across the internet, basically. That's how you get these ads that seemingly follow you around, right? You do a Google search on one device and you're getting data and information on all other kinds of places, and it just feels creepy and bad. And not only that, a lot of that information is shared with the third parties so that they can track you as well. So it's not just Facebook, you know, tracking you across Facebook. It's these ads following you across all different websites, all different platforms, and they're using that information to do that. And so now they need to ask permission by default. I think it's blocked by default for third parties. Basically, ads won't be able to follow you around the web unless you absolutely want them to. And what I love about this is I read a story this week that Facebook is already warning their publishers that they suspect at least a 50% drop in revenue from Apple devices due to this new feature. Basically, it's blocking their ability to do that kind of deep tracking and without people's consent. And I think, you know, that's ultimately great. I know a lot of people really like the fact that they get personalized ads and may be willing to share that data, but I definitely feel it should be an opt-in option. And that's basically what Apple's enabling here. And it should also be transparent. We should know when it's happening and which apps are doing it. And that's what this feature is designed to do. So I thought that was really cool. Another thing related to this anti-tracking stuff that is in iOS 14 is a new Wi-Fi setting. So when you go into the advanced settings inside Wi-Fi, now by default, Wi-Fi if you connect to public Wi-Fi hotspots or connect to Wi-Fi hotspots, it's going to set up a private address for your device, not the same address that is tied directly to your device. So it disables the ability to do this device tracking, device level tracking, because the problem with that is every device has a unique identifier. I think in the case of Wi-Fi, they're probably using the MAC address. And that is unique to that device. And even if they don't have a lot of your personal information, they can see that device connecting to various Wi-Fi hotspots everywhere, and they can track location data that way. They can probably work their way back to figure out that that is a device, particularly if you log into an account somewhere, attached to a specific account. And so by setting up this private address, it gives a different address to the Wi-Fi hotspot, and it does that every time, so you can't be tracked. And again, that's enabled by default. Now, you can turn this off if you want to have that tracking and let third parties have that tracking ability, but you know, this is how, if you've connected to different Wi-Fi hotspots at, say, Starbucks, they can figure out how many times you're connecting to their network, at least how many times the same iPhone is connecting to their network and where that device is connecting and things like that. And then they, you know, adapt and tailor their ads and their marketing and all that other stuff. But again, it ends up being creepy, a lot of this stuff. It's all tracking, and we should be in control. We should say when and where it's allowed. And Apple enabling more of these features, I think, is great. So let's get on to some of the more fun features. Sound recognition. This one is originally designed to be an accessibility feature, but I think it's going to be useful to just about everyone. It's a fun feature. It uses, I think, a lot of artificial intelligence technology and machine learning technology that Apple has developed. But basically, your device will be able to listen for common sounds in the environment and then alert you when it hears those sounds. Things like alarms or sirens, pet noises like your cat meowing or your dog barking, it can actually detect that and let you know about it. Even if just to play around with this, I'm kind of curious to check it out. But more importantly, things like car horns, doorbells, knocking on the door, crying babies, you can have your devices alert you to this. And I would imagine it'd be a great way to do a little bit of monitoring. Maybe your phone's in another, I would hope that it has universal notifications, right? So that maybe your device is in another room and you're on your iPad or your Mac and the alert pops up and you get a notification that one of these sounds has gone off. And that's kind of a cool new feature. It's cool new technology that I never really thought it was something we would have. So that's really, really cool. Another one that was supposed to come out, I think, with iOS 13, but got pushed, was FaceTime eye contact. And I think in our new kind of remote working world, this is going to become even more important. It is a little bit, creepy is not the word. It is a little bit weird though, right? And what I'm talking about is FaceTime eye contact. So this is a feature you would be able to enable in FaceTime. And then when you're on a FaceTime call, it uses advanced image processing in the camera system to make it appear as if you're always looking at the camera, even if you've glanced away. So say you're looking down at your keyboard doing some typing, or you're looking off to the side, your eyes are still going to be fixated or pointed at the camera. And I think it uses some advanced detection. I would imagine there's a threshold. So if you really turn your head, obviously it's not going to put eyeballs on the side of your head. But if you just sort of glanced away or slightly glanced down or something like that, it helps you maintain eye contact with your subject. And I'm really curious to see how this works and how well it works. I would imagine Apple has perfected it if they are going to be rolling it out into iOS 14. And I think it maybe wasn't quite perfected before and maybe was a little bit weird or off, which could be why they didn't roll it out in iOS 13. Another big feature that we do know about that's coming to iOS 14 is the app library. Apple has a lot of new features to help us manage all of the apps that we have on our devices and have cleaner home screens. And to that end, a cool new feature that I'm sure I will enable is the ability to install new apps directly into the app library, which is this new sort of end screen. It's the last screen on your device, and it's where all of your apps go automatically, and they get automatically organized into categories. And there's a category called recently added. So it would land in there rather than just randomly landing on one of your home screens. And I think a lot of us have probably been through this before, right? You install a new app and then you go on the app hunt to figure out like where it went. Usually it's on the last screen. But I think if you have holes within the screens, it could land on almost any screen. I seem to remember having trouble finding apps sometimes after I install them. You can always find them with a Siri search, but they get lost and hidden. And a lot of times you're just installing, you know, one-off apps or apps that you're not really going to interact with a lot. So just having it land in your app library, being able to search for it or just find it in the recent apps, I think is perfect. And so having that option, I think that's something I'm going to immediately turn on if it's not on by default, and will definitely use. Another kind of cool feature that's coming into Photos is a more hidden photo album. Apple added the feature and ability for photos in your library that you don't necessarily want to delete, but maybe they're just not the best photos. So, you know, I have a lot of these with my family. You get slightly blurry photos or maybe not just the best expression of someone, but you don't want to delete those photos because they're memories, and maybe you just want to hide them. So you can just use the option to hide the photos in the photo app, but they're not truly hidden because there has always been a hidden photo album that they go into. So if you go into your photo albums, you can just tap on that and immediately find them. And that's nice, but what if you really want to hide your photos so that somebody's just looking at your photo library can't find them? Well, now there is an option, a setting to toggle on to hide that photo album. So you can totally hide the album in settings. If you want to get it back, you can always go just flip it back on. But that way your hidden photos really do stay hidden. They're not anywhere in your library that is immediately visible, and you can always go back and get them. So that's kind of a cool new feature too. Last one that I want to mention is something that is coming back. Do you remember back in the day when we had iPods? I think some people still do have iPods, but back in the day with the iPods and iPod Photos, and Apple started adding games to iPods. So they had like a Texas Hold'em poker app or game, and they also had a music quiz game. And the way this thing worked is it would randomly play tracks from your music library, and then it would present you a list of possible artists and song titles, and then you would have to pick the right one. And they brought this back not as an app in iOS 14, but actually as a shortcut. And it really kind of shows off how powerful Apple's shortcuts are, because they built the entire game as an iOS shortcut. And it plays exactly the same as the original. It doesn't have all the graphics and stuff. It does display album art, which is pretty cool. But it basically plays 5 random tracks from your music library, and then you try and guess the title and artist from a multiple choice list. And then at the end, you have the option, you get your score, and you have an option to share that out on social media. And it is pretty neat. And what I really like about it too is it's a great way to explore the power of shortcuts, to see how that thing is assembled. Because it's a shortcut, you can literally open it up, you can edit it, and you can look through all the steps and all the things they had to go through to get that to actually play the way that it plays. And one thing, I tried it out, and one thing that I didn't like was when it got to the last track, the 5th track, it didn't stop. It just kept playing even after the shortcut ended. So I was able to easily go in and just add a step to that entire thing that just said, hey, stop the music after the last song has been picked and before you move on to show me my score and stuff like that. And it worked beautifully. I was able to edit that thing and basically do my own little version of it. And I guess I didn't really add a lot, but hey, it was a great way to learn shortcuts and explore it. And it's just a lot of fun. And it's nostalgic, right? I love it when Apple does this kind of nostalgic stuff and brings things back. So if you were a fan of the music quiz game on iPod, it is coming back in iOS 14 in the form of a shortcut. And so that's just some of the things that I've learned about in the past week or so that are coming to iOS 14 that Apple didn't really highlight in the keynote. I know there's probably hundreds of new features, and maybe you've discovered some of them. If you want to share those with us, send me an audio comment, shoot me an email, mattcast@gmail.com, and we'll keep this conversation going, because I think, you know, iOS 14 is right around the corner, and it's always good to have upfront information of kind of the things you want to jump into and check out the day it comes out and the day that you update your devices. Now we need to turn to something I think that is affecting our community that I'm a little bit disappointed about or a little bit frustrated about, and that is malware. Malware and adware and spyware seems to be something that's becoming more and more prevalent on Macs. I don't think it's, you know, made its way down into the bowels of iOS, but it's definitely something that I'm getting a lot of emails from our community about regarding the Mac. And the emails generally start out like this. It's like, hey, Adam, something, you know, odd or unusual is happening with my Mac. It's behaving in a weird way. And it usually culminates in, hey, I'm getting these weird pop-ups, especially when I'm browsing sites in Safari, or I'm just getting random pop-ups, security pop-ups from the operating system. And I really don't know what's going on. And it's referencing some sort of weird app or daemon that I never installed. I don't know what's happening with this stuff. And, you know, the immediate reaction I have almost 100% of the time is, yep, there's got to be some sort of adware, spyware, malware, you know, and there's various levels of this. A lot of it's innocuous. Adware, particularly, it usually comes in through the form of some sort of third-party app that some friend or relative recommended you installed, usually something related to doing some kind of search engine sort of thing or some sort of extension that you might add into Safari to, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times help promote charities, or it's under the guise of you're going to be giving back to charities if you use this like plug-in search engine or something like that. And a lot of these apps then unknowingly to you install in the background adware or spyware kinds of things. And so, you know, I don't necessarily blame the users. A lot of these companies get really tricky about installing this stuff. Or a lot of the ways I've seen this come into play too is through some sort of utility that claims it's going to clean up data on your Mac or help you better organize your photo library. Yeah, a lot of the stuff out there, stuff that's not coming through the Mac App Store. It's usually apps that are installed directly from a third party, and it works your way into the system. And, you know, it just happens. It happens to a lot of people. Even, you know, people who are pretty smart about this stuff can sometimes get tricked into installing this. So this week I had a listener who wrote in specifically about a pop-up warning they were getting that said, do you want the application Searchbox Server to accept incoming network connections? And when you see that message, that's generally Apple's firewall. Good thing to have turned on, especially if you're using your Mac outside of your home network. Just go into the system preferences, go into security, and enable the Apple firewall. Now, when you do it, you probably will get some messages for legitimate apps that are needing to make outbound or inbound network connections. You can just say yes and allow them to do that. But what's great about after you've set that up is if you do get a piece of malware or spyware and it's trying to do something like this, like use an incoming network connection, that's usually a pretty suspicious thing, right? If something's trying to make an inbound connection to your Mac, you want to kind of question that. You want to say, why do you need to come inbound to my machine? I mean, outbound is pretty common, right? It needs to call out to a server to get information, but it shouldn't have to be making inbound connections necessarily. So it's usually a red flag to me. You know, you want to question whichever app is asking that. You know, again, there are some legitimate cases where apps do need to do that, and it should be pretty obvious to you, because if you know you've installed an app from a reputable developer, you know, it's generally something you can allow. But if you're getting these weird pop-ups, you don't really know what's happening, my advice to you is Google is your friend. That's usually the very first place to start. So look at the error message, look at the message that's popping up, try and get the exact message. And I usually put the whole thing in double quotes, which tells Google, hey, find me this exact phrase, all of the words, and search for it and see what it pops up. And if it pops up with any sites sort of indicating, especially security websites, indicating that it's malware or spyware, you're going to want to run a malware detection tool and removal tool to get that out of there. Now, in this case, for this Searchbox Server one, I could not find any information turning up in Google, but I still suspected that it might be malware. So I wrote back to the listener, asked them to run a malware scan, and sure enough, they found it found some things. And so they were able to clean that up and remove it. As far as tools that I would recommend, because there's a lot out there, and you know, unfortunately, this is a little bit of a slippery slope. Some of the tools that are out there are not reputable and actually are malware or spyware themselves. So they come in under the guise of helping you, and then, you know, under the hood, sneak in and steal your information and throw up adware and all that sort of stuff. But a couple of reputable pieces of software that I feel comfortable, you know, telling you to use. One is Malwarebytes. They have both a free version and a paid version. The paid version adds some features for doing like active scanning and active removal and prevention and stuff like that. But in terms of just running a detection tool and being able to remove actually anything that it finds, Malwarebytes is totally free. The free version will scan your system, it will find anything, and it will help you remove it. And it is a great application. You don't need to run it all the time. I use it. I scan my Mac probably about once a month, and that's probably all you need to do, unless you've detected something or you're having strange behavior, and then I'll run it as well. And I've run this on my family's computers because occasionally they'll come to me and say, hey, I'm getting these weird pop-ups. What's going on? I've never found anything, fortunately, but, you know, it's nice to have the tool and just to know and to be able to rule that stuff out. So Malwarebytes, definitely put that on your list. I also noticed recently that CleanMyMac 10 has a malware detection and removal tool. So if you're a CleanMyMac fan, and count me in that camp, I love this tool. It does all kinds of things for your Mac, including being able to find large files, be able to clean up your duplicates and help just run your general log cleanup and all kinds of things. Just keep your Mac healthy. Clean My Mac is a really, really great tool. And if you're a SetApp subscriber, it is part of SetApp, so you may already have access to that. It is a paid application, but definitely, you know, they've been sponsor here on the MacCast in the past. They're not currently, but a great application, and I was using it well before they were a sponsor because it just does, it's a great utility for having on your Mac. So Clean My Mac, Malwarebytes, those are things you can use to help detect and clean up malware if you have it. And again, watch out for things like browser extensions. Just make sure, again, the general rules apply. You want to make sure that you're installing software from known and reputable developers. And just use your best judgment. If something seems fishy, it probably is fishy. Like, you know, your spidey senses are tingling for a reason, and you probably should avoid that thing, or at least jump on Google and do some research. That's the other thing, is even if you have an inkling, I think it's a very good thing when it comes to software and installing stuff on any of your devices to have mild paranoia. You know, go out and do some searching around. Look, you know, check on the developer. If you can, try and get your software from the Mac App Store, because that's trusted and vetted. And for sure, use Gatekeeper on your Mac. So that's the option when you go into your Mac and you go into the security settings, where you tell it to only allow software from trusted developers or the Mac App Store. And trusted developers mean that they have a signed developer certificate from Apple. You don't want to just allow every piece of software on your Mac, because that is an option. You can completely turn that off, and you can allow software to be installed from anywhere. I would not disable that. Leave that on. The other thing that you'll sometimes get some advice on for some apps, this is pretty advanced, but I do want to mention it, is System Integrity Protection, or SIP. You might hear that term. It's pretty hard to turn this off, so don't. It's hard to turn off for a reason. It protects the vital pieces or parts of your operating system from third-party apps being able to install into those locations. So basically, it stops apps from being able to install into your system folder. It stops apps from being able to install things at a higher level permission or at a root level on your operating system. So you want to leave that on. Sometimes some older utilities or tools or things will have instructions. I've run across it online that say, oh yeah, to install this, you need to turn off System Integrity Protection. Really question that. Really question the reasons why you would be doing that. Don't just take that for granted and do it. There are some legitimate reasons, but mostly for developers, for people like myself. I've needed to run into it with some permissions needed for like web development work that I do. But even there, I try to find alternative ways to install it under my user account. So don't turn off System Integrity Protection. You would know, a lot of times when I mention this, people ask, how do I know if I turned it off by accident or something like that? You really can't do it accidentally. It requires booting into your recovery partition and running some terminal commands. So you would know if you had turned off system integrity protection. It's not easy to do. And just in general, don't do it. You know, it does open your, it gets rid of some of Apple's security and opens yourself up to potential attacks. So don't do that. The last thing I want to mention, though, is just I'm proud of my mom. And I bring this up because this stuff is not hard to do, right? This mild paranoia thing, keeping yourself protected is not hard to do. She called me this last week because she got a phishing email. She got an email. She has a Yahoo account, a Yahoo Mail account, and it was an email from, quote, Yahoo, saying that day they were going to disable her account if she didn't log into the account and change some settings. And she called me up and said, hey, you know, I need to send you this. This doesn't seem right to me. And sure enough, full-on phishing scam. And I was able to tell her, yep, your spidey senses were right. You did not. That was not from Yahoo. You know, they would not do that. They would give you way more than 24 hours notice if they wanted you to do something. I think it was under the guise of enabling two-factor authentication and saying you were required to turn it on. I think she actually already has it on for her account. Knowing me, I've already enabled it. I can't remember for sure, but I think it's on. And so, yep, that stopped that, and she prevented herself from getting scammed potentially again with malware, spyware, or something even worse. So, you know, stay safe out there in our community. Don't get tricked. And if you do, don't feel bad. You know, just run malware bytes, get that stuff off of there and move on with your life. It's not a real big deal. All right, last thing I have for you this week, and it is a fun thing. It is a thing of the moment. I've missed doing these. I just haven't, you know, being at home now, I'm not discovering as many things. So actually, that's something you in the community can help me out with. If you have a really cool thing that you've run across or discovered, you don't even have to record your own thing of the moment, although I would love that. If you wanted to share it with me, let me know what you're enjoying. Some cool new product you've discovered, some cool new piece of software that you're running, an app, a game. It doesn't really matter. It can be almost anything. It can even be, you know, tangentially related to technology and your Mac. You know, it could be some sort of new notebook or something like that you're really into that you use alongside your Mac. And I would love to hear about those. So share those with me. But this week, what I have for you is a new game called The Last Campfire, and it is out on Apple Arcade. So fortunately or unfortunately, you are going to have Apple Arcade to take advantage of this one, but I'm going to make a big case for you getting Apple Arcade if you at all have a passive interest in games on iOS or the Mac or Apple TV, for that matter. But what this is a casual puzzle-style, story-driven adventure game by Hello Games. This is actually the same game studio that is responsible for the bigger title No Man's Sky, which is hugely popular in, like, you know, gaming communities, like with serious gamers. So this one's obviously a lot more casual. It's a, you know, it's a puzzle style game. I am a huge fan of puzzle style games like the Room series, Myst, and Monument Valley. So if you're into any of those kinds of games, this is very much in that genre. What I love about this is it has amazing visuals. The art direction on this is incredible. It has an amazing, very compelling storyline that really engages you. And it's the story of a little lost ember trapped in a puzzling world, searching for meaning and a way back home, and along the way helping other embers who are kind of lost in this environment, and they're all trying to find their way back home, really kind of to the afterlife, to be honest, you know. But it's very positive. The colors are very bright. The environments are fun. A lot of really fun characters in this. I really, really enjoyed it. I would say the puzzles in the game, if you're really into puzzle games, they're probably not going to be super challenging. They range from easy to, I would say, medium hard. There were a few that had me stumped for a little while, but nothing super advanced, nothing really outrageous, which makes the game in some ways a lot more fun. But if you're looking for something super, super challenging, this probably isn't it. Again, this is more about the storytelling. It's more about the character development. The puzzles are there to help drive the game along, and they're fun and challenging, but you're not going to be pulling your hair out. I never felt like I needed to run to the internet to try and figure out a section or something like that. So The main goal here is to run around the game to rescue some of the other embers that are trapped. The game calls them the Forlorn, and they're trapped sort of between worlds, and you're trying to help them move on. And there is kind of a secondary element where throughout the story you will find little pieces of journal entries, scraps of paper, messages from sort of the person that's driving the story, and you're kind of putting together a storybook, basically a whole part of the whole story. And I did not find all of those in my first playthrough in the game. And so there is what looks like to be an explore mode. I haven't checked this out yet, but I'm assuming it's going to allow me to go back through the game and try and find all of those little scraps of paper that are hidden in little corners. So there's the main sort of puzzle element that's driving the story. And then you, as you're walking around the environment, you try and unlock different areas that will allow you to access these little pieces of paper to help kind of fill out that journal. So my first time through, I played the entire thing. It was probably about 8 to 10 hours of active gameplay, and not all, you could play it all through, I guess, in a single sitting, but probably multiple sittings. And it's not a super long game. I would say, depending upon how good you are at solving puzzles, if you're, you know, it might go a little bit longer if you're not a huge puzzle game person. But I just have to say, it was incredibly fun, and really another great example of the quality of the titles that you get on Apple Arcade. And that's where I'm making the case for, if you're into iOS games, if you're into, you know, games on Apple TV at all, I think $5 a month is a great value for Apple Arcade. Almost every month I find 1, 2, maybe 3 titles that I end up playing and end up really enjoying. And for example, this last Campfire, it didn't come out as an Apple exclusive. It's also available on Switch and PC and several other platforms, including Steam and Epic Games. And over there, it's $15. So you'd be paying $15 for this game, and with your Apple Arcade subscription at $5 a month, you just get the game. And it's right out there. So really, really fun. Last Campfire, it just came out this past week on Apple Arcade. And if you are enjoying games, Apple Arcade or otherwise, again, please share those with us. I'd love to know what you're into and what you're really enjoying, because that's how we discover these things, right? Is through each other. And I am going to give you a bonus thing of the moment this week. And this comes, big thanks to Ken Ray, macOS Ken, macosken.com. I was on a new show of his, and we got to talking about Apple TV Plus shows, and I was mentioning how much I really enjoyed most of the content that I've watched on Apple TV Plus. And he asked me, did you see Ted Lasso yet? And this was one, because it was kind of sports themed, I like Jason Sudeikis, but I wasn't rushing to get into, and he mentioned that it was really, really good, and that it was this sort of comedy with heart. And you know, with the current world situation, I was kind of feeling like I needed that sort of thing. So I jumped in and I immediately got hooked. I completely binge watched this thing. It's getting a lot of good buzz in the community, and I'm hearing a lot of the same things about it. It's very much well deserved. I think it could be Apple's really first breakout hit on Apple TV Plus. It's starting to feel that way. I think the buzz is getting going in the Apple community right now, but I could see it expanding outside of that community. And like I said, I think the timing for this is perfect. So if you're looking for a funny, sincere, and, you know, frankly, very heartwarming comedy series, something to just, you know, escape you from what's happening right now in the world, this is definitely it. Check out Ted Lasso on Apple TV Plus. I think you will really enjoy it. But with that, that is going to do it for the show for this week. Thanks for hanging out with me for another episode. As always, I'd like to thank my show sponsors, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, and PDF Pen for iOS. You can get more information and details, check out their great software by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at CacheFly.com, and all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That phone number is 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-I-AM-9. And if you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you can find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And finally, if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/maccast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/themaccast, or find me as MacCast on Instagram. That is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.